If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
We always make sure to invest in the projects individually as well, so that our limited partners know that we are in it with them and we're not just looking to make money off of them on the deal. I think that's really important. And for us, that's just the way we operate. We always have, and we will continue to do so.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Corinne is a musician turned real estate investor, originally from Los Angeles and now based in Philadelphia. She spent 13 years in music, 5 years in IT project management, and has 8 years in multifamily before pivoting to self-storage in 2019. She is the operations side of her company, Hearthfire Holdings, co-founded with her husband, Sergio. Corinne, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Sam.
It's great to have you on. I'm excited, really, you know, to dive in, as I am with everyone who comes on, you know, to your story. And if you can, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on, can you give us a brief overview of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there?
So I started with three units, a triplex, in 2012. Now we have approximately 100 units under management in the multifamily and 4 self-storage facilities, approximately 100,000 square feet in the closer to the Lancaster area.
Wow. Now that's pretty cool. So the 100 units, is that all one complex or is that several?
No, it's spread out. It's a little bit killing me, but yes.
Well, I'd love to hear about that, because I mean, one of the things that we really focus on this show is things I think we learned from what we've done wrong, more than we learn from what necessarily we did right. Because sometimes we do things right and we don't even know necessarily that we don't have the lessons built in. They're like, oh, I should have done this differently. So you said you got to, let's just jump on into that. You've got 100 units in multifamily. What's the smallest unit that you, or smallest complex you have?
The smallest is a duplex. And then there is a 50 unit in there. So fill in the gaps. But the mix in between is from 2 to 12 units are kind of filling in the difference between the one big building and then the rest of the smallers.
Right, right. Which of those is the hardest for you to manage?
It's usually the smaller units.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, we hear.
And we've sold them, but we did have a few single families. And when we had single families in a portfolio, that was the worst.
The worst. What? So talk to us about that. Like, were you self-managing? No outside mm-hmm. management, and you're still self-managing these? Mm-hmm. Wow. Have you ever had outside management?
No. So we actually built up. So Hearthfire Holdings started as the management function for our investments. We didn't want to be the landlord knocking on the door, collecting rent checks. So we stood up Hearthfire to be that business intermediary between ourselves and the tenants. And then it grew from there.
Right. Now that's interesting. What are some of the lessons that you've learned as you have acquired all these different, you know, mixes of units? Like, are there some things you would do differently if you could go back?
We did some things right, which was when we built it, we implemented a full service property management system. We started with Buildium. It wasn't as customizable as we liked, so we switched pretty quickly to Propertyware, which has been able to grow with us up until now. We're considering next steps, because as we continue to grow, we're at that point where we're looking at maybe a Yardie or an Appfolio. But Propertyware has served us very well for these 8-9 years. It allowed us to automate and grow quickly while we were still both working full-time W-2 jobs and traveling a fair amount for those jobs. So by investing upfront a decent ticket price into buying quality software, but it allowed us to automate so many things that we were able to juggle everything, keep the W-2 so that we could still qualify to continue purchasing additional investments, and then got to a point where we were able to both quit our W-2s and do this full-time.
Right. No, that's a great key there, is building out the systems early on. I think that's one of the mistakes I think we often make, is that we don't build the foundation correctly. And so then it just becomes difficult, if not impossible, to keep the machine, you know, running smoothly. So that's really cool. what was the process on your purchases? Like, when did the 50 units come along? Did you scale? Did you continue to just buy bigger and bigger as you went?
We did. We started, so we syndicate. And so we started with our own, started with me, and we were just dating at the time. And then we bought a building together, and then we eventually got married.
Rings or buildings, then, whatever.
No. but then, so then we started bringing in our family and friends, exposing them to the idea of real estate investing. Not everybody individually has a down payment in their back pocket. So we pooled our money with the self-storage facility that we bought in 19 was with 15 of my closest family and friends. And the other additional three self-storage properties are with 50 of my closest family and friends. So sharing the journey is the way that we've been able to do it and the way that we love doing it.
Can you talk to us about that? What do you mean when you say sharing the journey?
So bringing people into real estate who otherwise wouldn't, who might be not have the knowledge or expertise or the comfort level to do it on their own, but through us, because we both are very passionate about educating to our friends and family about the long-term wealth opportunities that real estate can provide. So doing some of that soft educating, right? Not necessarily cramming it down people's throats. If they don't want to hear about it, fine. But gradually laying that foundation, and especially for family and friends who have children, talking about the generational opportunities that becoming a real estate investor can provide for not only them, but their children.
Right, right. Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. So what are some of the ways that you have educated the people who are now investors with you?
We just talk about it. So I was very blessed in that my parents laid a strong financial groundwork for me. So I was able to get an undergraduate and a master's college degree without any school loans. And that was thanks to them starting up a whole life insurance policy for me when I was born. So we talk about starting there necessarily. And I'm not an insurance broker. I'm not pitching people anything. I'm talking about my experience and how I was able to get through two college degrees without any debt, and then be able to reuse those policies as well for the first down payment on my first investment, make some cash flow on that investment, pay it back, use it again to buy the next one. So just telling people my own story. I don't have all the answers, but just as an intro, that usually is a great first place to start, especially for people who have zero to very little exposure to it.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. That's super cool. Let's go back and talk about syndication of your projects. What was the first deal that you guys actually syndicated?
We did a triplex in South Philly.
Really? Well, that's cool.
Yep.
So that typically, yep, I would think that and this is where I'm hoping you can correct me. That seems like it would be too small of a project to necessarily go out and raise funds and actually get all your PPMs and your OMs and all that stuff put together. Is that the way you did it, or was it more like a joint venture with a lot less paperwork?
No, we did it all the paperwork. Again, talking about going back to investing in technology to scale. For us, it was an exercise to go through all of those steps so that when we went bigger, we knew how it worked.
Right, right. That's an expensive, expense to put on the bottom line of that project. But it sounded like maybe it was worth doing, not just for the future gains, but also, you know, that project was worth investing in. That's really cool. Let's jump into self-storage. So you were doing multifamily, and then one day you woke up and said, I'm going to buy a storage unit, or how did that transition happen?
Exactly. And then a week later, I bought the first one.
Really?
No.
I don't know. I can believe it. You seem like a go-getter.
2016.
So.
Yeah, no, 2016, the market in Philadelphia was popping. And our initial plan was to be long-term buy and hold. But the way the numbers were working, we're like, we'll be fools if we don't sell now.
Okay.
So we got our investors on board with that. We sold off a total of six smaller syndications in the city. Delivered gains between 19 to 25% was our spread across those IRR.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we were really happy.
Everyone
our investors
should be
were
happy.
Really happy with it. Yeah. and we were initially trying to look into getting into larger multifamily, but the numbers just weren't working. Mm-hmm. Because we were hands-on management, we wanted to stay relatively local where we could keep our hands on the pulse of it. So we learned about self-storage. We found something that worked, but it was a year and a half later. I mean, we educated ourselves for a year, and then did underwriting and made offers for about a year and a half, and then finally closed in August of 19.
Oh, wow. So there was a 3-year really transition period for you.
For that, sure.
That's awesome. How did you educate yourself on the, no pun intended, but self-storage space?
Books, magazines, online forums. I wasn't really in podcasts at that point. I don't know if podcasts were happening around back then. I had a baby, so I wasn't doing too much of that. But no, books. I mean, Scott Myers, I think, was the first book that we read. And then a couple other folks in the space. And then connecting through Bigger Pockets with other folks and just identifying other industry leaders in the space, consuming all that content and self-educating. We didn't join any masterminds or anything where we were paying a guru to educate us. We just did all of our self-teaching here.
Right, right. No, and you had a pretty strong foundation already.
We felt so. We felt a lot of the tools that we had built in residential property management would translate into managing storage tenants. The part of self-storage that's different from residential or mixed-use commercial is the truly business operations aspect of it. That's a little bit more closely aligned to hospitality or airline industry. It's a much more flexible pricing model. So it's a different back-end management system, our property, where it doesn't extend into self-storage. So identifying the technology providers in the space that are really custom for self-storage. But it's real estate, but it's also very much a business. So that was a fun learning experience as well.
What are the unit sizes that you guys, what are the transactions? How many units per location? I think you said you had 3 locations. Is that right?
Yep, 4. So the first one was 30,000. And then the additional 3 were purchased as a portfolio. There are a total of 71 with a 30,000 expansion that's getting started later this year.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's super cool. That's super cool.
Yeah. It'll be exciting.
I need to pick your brain. We get offline here. There's a lot there. I don't necessarily want to, you know, ask you to share here, but it's, that's very cool. So walk us through that. Is there like the front end typical, you know, office operations? Do you have people on site who are, you know, managing a front end office of each of these locations, or is it remote, or how does that work?
We're going fully automated with, across the 4 portfolios, 2 people full-time to do daily site walkthroughs. We have a 24/7 call center that takes all the phone calls, takes payments, can process all of that sort of thing. So the boots on the ground folks are really for making sure that the facilities are secure, that we don't have people moving in or out as they shouldn't. And just making sure that there's no issues there on the ground. So those are doing once daily walkthroughs, but then otherwise we're really strongly leveraging technology tools and making it as automated as we possibly can.
Right, right. That's brilliant. So you've got 2 people who are, you know, full-time for 4 locations. How many units is that?
Just about 700.
Holy smokes. Yeah. That's awesome.
There are some really large size units, like indoor RV parking units. So it's not a huge number count of units, but it's a decent footprint. We're trying to stay right in the kind of mid range. We want to stay under the radar of the REITs and whatnot. And that's kind of our MO. We stay in the more rural, outside suburban areas. So that's the demand in those markets too, is the larger sizes.
Sure, sure. What were some of the problems that you were looking to solve, other than, you know, obviously competition, you know, you're getting kind of priced out of the market in multifamily, but what were some of the other things you said in multifamily that you didn't like, that you said maybe self-storage, you know, does have that multifamily didn't, or I guess there's another way to ask that, like what attracted you to self-storage?
The market resiliency. We believed that we were at the top of a bubble in a market, and we wanted something that would help us and our investors, because remember, our investors are my parents, my family, my kids, my nieces and nephews. We wanted something that would ride out any possible market corrections, downturns, et cetera. And so what we liked about self-storage is that it provides a need, whether we're in an up cycle or a down cycle.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a great one. That's a great one. What do returns look like in self-storage versus, say, multifamily or some other asset classes? Is there a particular range? Is it less? Is it higher? What's that look like?
So since we're coming at this from a syndication standpoint, there are certain returns that we are targeting in our investments. We don't invest in something unless we underwrite it to meet certain criteria.
Sure.
So for the three property portfolio, what we are, our investors are getting an 8% cumulative preferred return. The equity split is 75 to our limited partners, 25 to the general partners. And then our underwriting is projecting on a sale in year 4 or 5, somewhere between 19 to 22% our IRR. That projection does not include the construction expansion. So we're being very conservative in those projections.
Right, man, that's great. That's absolutely fantastic. I mean, I think those are the kind of returns profiles that, or return profiles that make people really want to get in on a deal. And that's really generous. I mean, if you is 75, 25, is that kind of what you guys have done in the past? And that's just kind of what you're doing moving forward?
Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is really cool.
We always make sure to invest in the projects individually as well, so that our limited partners know that we are in it with them and we're not just looking to make money off of them on the deal. I think that's really important. And for us, that's just the way we operate. We always have, and we will continue to do so.
And I think that's something that if you are a passive investor listening to that, that's a key point that you should be looking for, because the deal sponsor, in my opinion, should always be investing in as a limited partner. Cause we just want to know, I'm both a passive investor and an active investor. And I want to know that the limited partner or that the general partners actually have some skin in the game. That's really cool. Corinne, let's jump in here to the final four, if you don't mind. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Surround yourself with people better than you. Better, smarter, faster, stronger. Just do it. Took me a while to get there for my own ego. Once I did, I'm still early on in the journey. Surround yourself with people better than you. Just do it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a great piece of advice. When it comes to investing in yourself, what's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I'm a morning person. So I get up early. I read. I get either a workout or a meditation in. I have an almost four-year-old daughter, so I get up before her. I usually get a solid 3 or 4 hours of my day before she does. And that is a tremendous help. When I fall off the wagon and I sleep in, I feel it immediately.
Right. Yeah, I can only imagine. That's awesome. Good for you. 3 or 4 hours. That's ambitious to get up before the kids do that early. So that's great. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're currently doing to make the world a better place?
You know, this is a shortcoming of mine, and I'm going to just admit it. So my background is in music, and so I give back by singing in my local churches. I can confidently say that I'm giving back through that, especially this past year, being able to provide some sort of musical refuge for people as we're really struggling. I've seen the impact of that, particularly in everything that we've gone through this past year. Otherwise, I'm a member of GoBundance Women, and my sisters in that network are helping me find other ways to give back. So I'll leave it at that. And it's something that I am working on.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Corinne, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
You can email me, Corinne, Corinn, at HFIRE Holdings. Or, you know, you can find me on the interwebs. If you do a search for Hearthfire Holdings, you'll find us on Facebook and our website and whatnot. But I think probably email. I won't lose track of it there.
Sounds great. Corinne, thank you so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.